Light it up.
Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We are live from Newmarket for the Hometown Hockey Tour. Beautiful day, Newmarket. Ben Annis alongside Dave Zarum and Ryan Dixon for the next couple hours. Lots to get to as we will talk about the early days of the National Hockey League's regular season. And, of course, that means lots of Austin Matthews talk. Jack Eichel, he's hurt. So is Sidney Crosby. We'll preview the NBA season as well and the Toronto Raptors' chances to repeat as Eastern Conference finalists. But, gents, we got to start, of course, with the Toronto Blue Jays losing 2-0 in Game 1 yesterday in Cleveland. Corey Kluber was good. Marco Estrada was real good, except for one pitch. And it resulted in a Francisco Lindor 2-run home run. Dave, encourage, discouraged after Game 1 if you're a Blue Jay fan.
A big picture encouraged, but I just want to say it is beautiful here in Newmarket, but man, it is pretty chilly out here as well. I just have to get these complaints out of the way.
Like,
I
feel like it's middle of October. It's beautiful.
I need to squeeze some like sriracha in my coffee or take a bite of a ghost pepper.
That's disgusting.
You know, chew on a water wasabi, something to heat me up here. But anyways, so did the Jays' bats, because yesterday was kind of frustrating to see them leave so many runners on. Obviously, when they were having their cold spell in September, that was the issue, right, is like unsituational hitting. But considering how good Kluber is, we saw how good Miller was, and probably I assume will be. But given how good Kluber is, I'm not too concerned in terms of how the rest of the series will shape up. They ran into like a pitcher who was like just on fire. He was like hotter than beef vindaloo. But other than that, like I'm not too concerned. I like the fact that they were able to get runners in scoring position. I'll take that because you can work from there.
I've learned a term this fall. Listening to a political podcast called Bedwetters. There's a lot of bedwetters out there.
I listen to that podcast as well.
I think there's no need for the Jays bedwetters to come out because, you know, it's strange to say because it was the first game of the season, but or season of the series, but that was basically a must-win for Cleveland.
Yeah.
They're at home, and they're throwing their only ace. I mean, it's worth noting for those who aren't aware, Cleveland had great pitching until it was bitten by the injury bug, and the Jays would have been in real trouble, I think, if they had their entire staff at their disposal. But they don't. Their guys are dropping by like flies.
Drones, man.
Yeah, those drones will get you every time.
I warned everybody about drones.
So, yeah, I mean, Cleveland's basically looking at this series going, if we don't win the Kluber starts, we have no chance. I have to believe, you know. So you're at home. If they don't get that win, then Cleveland's in a heap of trouble. So I kind of feel like, you know, they more or less, you know, held serve. But if you're the Jays, you're thinking we can get a pitching performance like we got from Estrada in Game 2, in Game 3, in Game 4. And Cleveland has to expect something less than what it saw from Kluber. I mean, in all fairness to Tomlin, he was great closing out the Red Sox at Fenway Park. We know Cleveland can really shorten the game, even just with two guys, not even three guys, like we've seen with the Royals in the past. And, you know, full props that it's one thing to say, well, they should win because Kluber's out there, but they went out and did it, and, you know, that's executing is the real key. But yeah, if you're the Jays, I think it amounts to a bit of a shoulder shrug, because it would have been amazing for Toronto to win that game and feel like it, you know, really had things going in its favor. But now you're still looking at, you know, coming back a good chance with a split and feeling really good about your matchups at home.
What you were referencing, the drone thing, if people aren't aware, Trevor Bauer was scratched from his game to start because he was messing with a drone and cut his finger up. So it is Josh Tomlin getting the start in Game 2, and they're already without Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar.
Yeah.
But that's probably going to work out. I think it's going to work out in the Blue Jays' favor, because Tomlin's a guy who has this season at least performed better on the road than at home. Now he's forced to pitch at home. Hopefully you think that works out. Happ is also going to have a really nice matchup today with the way he pitches with his fastballs, and the Indians have troubles with that. So everything's lining up pretty well for the Jays to bounce back today, I think.
I will say, and Josh Tomlin's been a guy that's been in and out of the rotation. Yeah. He's been relegated to the bullpen. He put together a pretty nice start against the Jays when they saw him earlier this season. But there is, I think, something a little concerning about game one. I mean, they lost the game. So that's concerning. That's not great. You want to win games at any point, but especially the American League Championship Series, and they lost game one. A split coming out of Cleveland would be nice. But this is what we expected out of the Indians, that the bullpen would be frightening. Mm-hmm. And early days, it was frightening. Now, Corey Kluber is their best starter. We've been over that. Because outside,
it's not even close.
No, it's not. And he's one of the best in all of the major leagues of baseball. But so is their bullpen. And so is Andrew Miller. Mm-hmm. And so is Cody Allen. And it's not the regular season, and you do have a day off tomorrow. So you can throw those guys for six outs each and 40-plus pitches. So when you look at what you need, if you're the Indians out of Josh Tomlin, it's not a lot. So I don't know. It's certainly you'd rather be facing Josh Tomlin than Corey Kluber, but the prospect of needing to come back against this Indians bullpen is not a good one, so you might be well-served to score early.
Yeah, you got to be aggressive like right off the bat. And, yeah, your goal has to be to try to light up Tomlin and not rely on those kind of clutch hits late in the game because you're going to have trouble against that bullpen. And we saw it yesterday. Miller was ridiculous. What was it, five outs, five strikeouts?
Yeah.
That's worrisome. That's a bad trend.
Yeah, I think, you know, Dave alluded to it. The concerning thing is even if it was coming against a great pitcher, just the optics of not being able to get those big hits. I mean, they had two on in the first three innings.
They got lots of base runners
they
against
Kluber. And I mean, again, I know, like, I know Shai Davidi, one of our men down in
never heard of him.
In Cleveland was talking about it. You know, essentially the Jays had the approach. They executed the approach they wanted. They just couldn't get the knock when they needed it. So, I mean, if you really want to play the Pollyanna, everything's wonderful game, you could even take that approach and say that, you know, they didn't score, but they were threatening and kind of getting to Kluber a little bit. You're right, Ben. I mean, you don't want to lull yourself into a false sense of, you know, just show up today and win the game. Of course not. And, you know, Cleveland clearly has a little bit of underdog or
I thought you were going to say pixie dust because it seems like they do have a little bit of pixie dust.
Sure,
as well.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, they would don't forget, no one was really giving them a chance against the Red Sox, and they slammed them in three games. So yeah, I mean, I think people have drawn lines a little bit between them and the Royals, and I think that's probably fair. But I mean, starting pitching is just so important, and I mean, a seven game series. Yes, it's not that long, I suppose, but it just seems long enough to me that the clear gap between what the Jays can run out and what Cleveland can runs out, I just have to feel like it will be a major factor.
Like it, this all kind of sounds like super optimistic for the Blue Jays. I do think it's going to prove to be a really hard series to win. Like Cleveland is obviously a really
Cleveland's
good.
Not going away. They're not a team that's just going
to
be
have
like,
to see
oh,
Kluber at least once more
absolutely.
In this series.
Absolutely.
But that being said, like Dixon, you're right. Whereas Cleveland has, they send out Kluber, and that's their super confident game, and then they have these other starters who are solid, but you know, but you can't guarantee kind of their success. What the Blue Jays have is they can replicate at least very close to what Estrada gave them with three or four other guys, and that's just such an amazing luxury to have, especially, like you said, Dixon, against a team that doesn't have that luxury. That might be enough to give you the edge, but it doesn't matter if the bats don't show up. It doesn't matter if they're not timely.
No, and they had shown up for the most part in the postseason. How about this? The Blue Jays actually see their six-game winning streak come to an end in game one as well. Yeah. That was their first loss in October because they, of course, won the final two games in Boston to wrap up the regular season. First 2 days of October, won the wild card game, and then swept away the Texas Rangers. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. We're on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We are live in Newmarket.
Newmarket.
For the hometown hockey tour, it's a little early. People starting to filter in now. It's Connor McDavid's hometown, and yes, we will talk about Connor McDavid and the NHL.
I don't know about you guys. I can just feel like the talent just floating around the air here in Newmarket. I can see how it produces such superstars. Like
really? I didn't get that sense.
Look around. You don't see this? You don't see these future stars all around you?
No, I didn't get that sense, but I'm not saying it doesn't exist. So, yes, a lot of positivity, amazingly, coming after game one that the Blue Jays lose. But let's talk about the negative as well, because there was definitely some negatives. Again, they lost the game. They also lost their second baseman again, mm-hmm. where it looked like Devin Travis was back and he was going to be close to full bore. He was hobbling around a little bit during that game, and then covering first on a bunt attempt, really wrenched that knee, had to leave the game in the middle of the defensive half inning, and you'd got to figure that he is probably done for the season. That looked rather serious, yeah. which is, man, that's, and I know he was hitting ninth yesterday, but that's a big part of your offense. When he's going well, that's just another mm-hmm. piece of this offense. He's the only Blue Jay starter that hit 300 this season. Mm-hmm. He was an outstanding offensive player. The defense was hit and miss. But, Dixon, if they're without Devin Travis, like, how does that out, how does that affect the outlook, not just for this series, but if you advance to the World Series, being without one-ninth of your good offense?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, he had the highest batting average of any regular, so clearly it's going to have an impact. I mean, at the same time, I have to feel like the Jays lineup, when it's going, is deep enough that it can withstand the loss of one guy. And obviously, you also have to factor in the emergence of Carrera. I mean, this is someone who I think it's fair to say they didn't expect anywhere near this kind of contribution.
You know, I think with him, it's a thing where they just kind of kept showing trust in him. You know, like, there's so many chances early on where he could have just been a guy who just keeps going, bouncing back.
Carrera?
Majors. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that just has a real...
Well, they were kind of forced into it with the Jose Bautista injury, right?
Yeah, fair enough. But, like, I just think they've shown faith in him. Like, yeah, they had to show faith in him. But he's just really benefited from all that playing time. And he's a real example of a guy who's just gotten better. Like, not in a dramatic way, but in a way where you trust him. Like, you trust him when you see him at the plate or in the field in a way that you didn't for a long time, or I didn't for a long time.
Yeah, he's going pretty well now. He had a bit of a trough there. Actually, kind of coincided when he got the everyday job when Jose Bautista went out. Some would say he was exposed a little bit. Laid down a pretty good bunt attempt yesterday, and Corey Kluber made a great play to throw him out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no Devin Travis means you're going to have one of Darwin Barney or Ryan Goins in the lineup, and neither guy is a great offensive player. Barney had his moments during the regular season. Yeah. Hey, Ryan Goins had some moments during the postseason last year at the end of the regular season.
You know Goins is going to give you defense.
Yeah, well, and there was a play yesterday that Devin Travis did not make, didn't factor into the final decision, of course, because the run scored on a two-run home run, and the base runner that was on, Jason Kipnis, was on via the walk. But there was a play not made that Devin Travis dove kind of over the ball. Mm-hmm. That's probably a play Ryan Goins or or Darwin Barney makes. But if you're the Blue Jays of September, you need every offensive weapon you can get.
Well, which is interesting because now you're adding a guy to your roster, right? Or you have your
Now there's Travis some dissent on this. I haven't had a chance to fully investigate this, but apparently the Blue Jays would not be able to replace Devin Travis on the ALCS roster.
See, that hurts, because you look at a guy like Smoke, who is a one-dimensional hitter, but in the right situation, he's like a guy who you could bring on when you need a timely home run or whatever. Mm-hmm. So to not have that option will hurt, because you're not going to get that from Barney or Goins.
And they were already playing a man short yesterday, because Francisco Liriano, mm-hmm. we expect to be back
today
for game two. But there, for him to be available today, they had to play one short yesterday. So maybe they'll be back to playing one short if what is written about Devin Travis's injury situation is correct, and they can't replace him on the roster.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Taste of what's on sportsnet.ca right now. Here's Gare Joyce.
I first saw Sidney Crosby play back in 2003, just a couple of days after his 16th birthday. He was playing for the Canadian team at an international under-18 tournament in the Czech Republic. He hadn't even played a game in the Quebec League yet. If you asked me then, I could have told you we'd still be talking about him 13 years later. It seems like he's been in the public eye ever since. The kid who made Cole Harbour famous. I wound up writing a book about Crosby before he turned 18 and played in Pittsburgh. There have been a bunch of other books since as well. You might think you already know everything there is to know about him. I thought as much when I drew the assignment to write a story about Crosby for our NHL preview. It wasn't just any story, though. I had to come up with 26 things that you didn't know about the Penguins captain. From his untidy dorm room back in the day, to his nickname in junior, to the reason he eats a certain brand of donuts. Sidney Crosby, A to Z.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey there, Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We are live from the Rogers Hometown Hockey Tour in Newmarket, Ontario. Lost the feed there briefly. Somebody hit the wrong button. They've been sacked. So we're good for the next
Thank
hour and
God.
A half. Yeah. I'm sure there will be no more technical difficulties the rest of the way. I'm not sure of that at all. But you know what? That'll make exciting radio, so make sure you do keep it tuned for the
it's
next
actually,
hour and a half.
I think it's actually kind of sad. Like, the guy had a family to feed.
No, no, there is no
no going back.
No
Chipotle for that guy's family tonight.
What is with you and the food analogies today? Take it easy.
I can't help it.
All right, let's get back to the Blue Jays here, who play game two this afternoon. Pregame 3 o'clock, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet, all the Sportsnets, Sportsnet Now, Sportsnet.ca, all of it. J-Hap against Josh Tomlin. But before we get to that, let's take a second to discuss the incredible playoff career of Marco Estrada as a Toronto Blue Jay.
Unreal.
Because he's been good this regular season. He had a bit of a hiccup when the Blue Jays went to the six-man rotation initially. He had a couple of rough goes of it. He's been battling a back injury all season long. Generally, he's been great all season long, but in the postseason, he's just, I mean, he's unbelievable. And I know he takes the loss in game one yesterday, but I mean, you can't fault him at all for that performance.
I mean, when they turned to him in game one, you had utmost confidence in it. Like, you supported the decision completely just because he's been so good. I mean, really, since he's came to the Jays, he's been a bit of, like, a revelation.
Yeah.
Obviously exceeded everyone's expectations. And you got a feel for him yesterday, like, his first complete game. But I love what he said afterwards, which is that he doesn't care because they lost. You know, he's not happy about his own personal success if it comes, you know, at the expense of the team. But he's just been so good. I'm looking forward to the fact that they're going to be able to get him out there again, hopefully this series.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, he started game one.
Yeah.
Game five.
Yeah, exactly. So
as long as they don't get swept.
Sure.
But yeah, he's just been unreal. It's like almost like found money. The fact that they were able to bring him back this offseason has just obviously been proving to really work out. And you're right, he was kind of up and down during the season, but the way he's been forming this playoffs is you couldn't ask for anything more.
It's funny, too. You can hear the explanation on – know why hitters have trouble with them, but when you watch, it's just so befuddling because you're like, well, why can't they hit that pitch?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not fast. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to watch a Kluber with a crazy, you know, crazy heat, but then like a huge hook, or Clayton Kershaw where it's like 12-6 curveball, and you're like, well, yeah, no wonder no one can hit that. But you watch Marco Estrada and you're like, so 87, I don't get it.
Yeah,
like, no. I don't understand.
Yeah, it seems like
but it's just, you know, it's such pinpoint placement and slows down those bats. And
Francona said yesterday, like, we knew exactly what we were looking for from him, and we still couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's because you know he throws that change up a bunch more than anybody in baseball, and you know it's devastating, but you just, for whatever reason, the deception, the spin on it, you can't slow your bat down enough unless you're Francisco Lindor. But he was the only guy able to do it.
I mean, I don't think we're going to see it in a lot of the other matchups, but that Kluber versus Estrada, like that pitcher's duel was just really fun to watch, even if the Jays came up on the wrong side.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of fun to watch. And, so when we were off the air there, I had a chance to dig it a little deeper into the Devin Travis thing, and it doesn't look like the Blue Jays will be able to replace him on this roster because the initial injury took place before the start of this series. It did not happen as a result of a play in this series. Maybe it was exacerbated by Game 1, but it's apparently up to the commissioner of Major League Baseball, who can look at the situation and say, well, you knew this was a risk when you activated him on the 25-man American League Championship Series roster. Mm-hmm. There's no recourse for you, which means that the Blue Jays will play with 24 men for the rest of this series, which is not great. It's not ideal, but if you get to your 25th man on your roster in a playoff series, something horrible has gone wrong.
Bigger things have gone wrong. That's right.
Right? Absolutely. Like if you see Ryan Tepera, Aaron Loop, Danny Barnes in a game, the things are probably not going right, unless it's the 45th inning. But yes, it doesn't look like the Blue Jays will be able to replace Devin Travis. What'd you guys make of the rotation, the way they set it up for this American League Championship Series? Not just with Game 1. We just discussed Marco Estrada, which made a whole lot of sense. He's been the Blue Jays' best starter in the postseason, their most clutch starter. Jay Happ in Game 2, saving Aaron Sanchez for Game 4, which means Marcus Stroman starts Game 3, where if they kept everything in line, Stroman would start Game 1. He was the next day's mm-hmm. starter. He did not start in the American League Division Series because he started the wild card mm-hmm. game. So now he's got a long time to wait before he sees action. It'll be back at Rogers Center. Was there any discussion for you guys as far as why the Blue Jays would do that and not just keep rolling them out, which it seemed like they were willing to do?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little puzzling just because, like you said, we didn't see Stroman in that division series, and it would make sense for him to start this series just to kind of keep the rotation order. But maybe they like him better at home. Maybe it's that kind of situation. Obviously, it worked out with Estrada yesterday. Even if they didn't win, they got everything they could have asked for from him, so it's hard to really question that
yeah,
call.
I think the body of work of Estrada in the postseason plus the overall body of work of J-Hap mm-hmm. this year made them believe these are the two guys that we should be putting out. I mean, clearly it worked well in Texas. And, you know, Stroman, don't forget, a lot of people wanted Liriano to start the wild card game over Stroman.
Right.
You know, he clearly did not have the season that people expected of him. He was essentially everything they could have asked for in that wild card game. But I think there's a bit of a divide between the two guys at the top, Happ and Estrada. And then, you know, I guess you're not going to call Aaron Sanchez a wild card, but he was very hit and miss in the game against Texas. Mm-hmm. When he was on, you're like, this guy's unhittable. And when he's not, it was something different. So they've treated him carefully all year. And, you know, now he gets more time between the two starts.
Well, Sanchez to me is the most interesting one, right? Because going into the postseason, you would have said, who's your best starter? Who gives you the best opportunity to have an absolutely spectacular ace-like start? And it's Aaron Sanchez.
Absolutely.
Despite the fact that the other three guys are great, Aaron Sanchez throws 97. He's got that incredible sinker. You'd say, well, Aaron Sanchez. I want Aaron Sanchez starting game one of a playoff series and coming back, at least starting twice in a playoff series. Now, understandably, the Blue Jays are still in that mode where they would like to limit his innings. He's going to get to 200 innings. Like, that's one more start and he's there. Right, he's over 190 innings this season. It's hard to get up in arms about it now because his last start wasn't so great and everybody else has been so good. And it is six of one, half dozen the other, right? Because it's hard to separate all four starters. But the Blue Jays are protecting him. It seems like they are not willing to start him more than once in a postseason series. So they're four wins away from being in a World Series and eight wins away from winning a World Series, and they're still worrying about an innings mark for Aaron Sanchez, which, I mean, on the surface, it might not affect things because the depth of starters is there, but it is kind of interesting that we're still doing this here in the postseason.
Can I just say things are getting crazy here in Newmarket?
Yeah, because the
man in a gorilla suit just dropped off a car.
Yeah, there you can hear him. He's got a chain around his neck. It's one thing to have to be approached by a man in a gorilla suit. It's quite another for a man in a gorilla suit to hand you his business card, which he just did.
Listen, typical Newmarket, am I right?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been here before. Maybe this happens all the time.
Trust me, this is classic Newmarket.
Okay.
Right now.
But yeah, no Aaron Sanchez. Well, okay. They're limiting his innings.
The thing with Sanchez, though, is that, you know, even if you see him later in the series, like a game three, game four, what do we say? He's game four?
Game four starter.
So because he's pitched so well for the Jays, yeah, he was a little shaky in that Rangers game. But I think it's a good feeling knowing that if you are in like a win or go home type of situation, he's the guy you're putting out there. You know, that's like the silver lining. But what's kind of fascinating about it is that last night after the game, Gibby was asked about, I think it was Tulo and his spot in the lineup and whether he's considering changing it around. And he said, you know, like sometimes when you got a good thing going and you change it, you know, just for the sake of changing it, you know, messes up your team. Yet that's kind of what he's done with his pitching staff.
Yeah.
So yeah, kind of mixed messages there. But because, like you said, six of one, half dozen of the other, whatever that saying is, they're all.
No, you got it.
Okay, cool.
They're all more assertive.
Six of one and half dozen of
no,
of pitching are. Staffs.
Okay,
went to the well too many times. Yeah, I mean, I don't. I guess, you know, not being having intimate knowledge of the science behind, you know, whether 199 innings versus 214
right.
makes a huge difference. I mean, mm-hmm. it is.
At this
you
point.
Could scratch your head, but I think. It also is a case of as good and, excuse me, as dominant as Sanchez does look sometimes. I mean, it'd be one thing if there was him and the three other
right.
guys.
If it was Corey Kluber and Josh Tomlin.
That's
right?
Right. Exactly. That's right. It's not that dynamic for the Jays, so they kind of have the luxury of saying, I mean, okay, I guess you can point to a two-run bomb, but other than that, like what you know, if Aaron Sanchez pitched last night, what are the odds he doesn't give up two runs over eight innings, you know?
Let's talk about what John Gibbons talked about, Dave, and the question that was posed to him about flip-flopping at least Troy Tulowitzki mm-hmm. and Russell Martin. Tulowitzki's been the hotter bat as of late. We know Russell Martin had that incredible run in September, but at the end of the month, his bat cooled down quite a bit. He's been a very streaky guy, started off the season very poorly. Troy Tulowitzki, ever since about the All-Star break, has been real, real good and a very consistent hitter for this Blue Jays team. John Gibbons is hesitant to mess with his lineup. Joe Maddon does it all the time. Yeah. Joe Maddon, day in, day out, even in the postseason, they're like snowflakes, his lineups. you rarely see the same one twice, but that's partly as well because of the dynamic the Chicago Cubs have. They have a bunch of guys that can play a bunch of different positions. John Gibbons doesn't change his lineup all that much, and maybe it's parsing to a degree, but, you know, in this type of a microcosm, when you're talking about a short series like this, one at bat can make the difference, and who's batting after who can make the difference. Should the Blue Jays be looking at swapping at least those two, Russell Martin and Troy Tulowitzki, in the lineup?
I mean, I don't mind staying it, keeping it the same. You know, I think that there is something to be said for consistency and to know just the kind of level of comfort. You know exactly who's coming up behind you, who's in front of you. I could see why you'd want to do it because you can't really risk losing at this point. Like every decision you make has to result in winning. But Tulo's been clutch at the end of the season. He's being put in a situation where he can't succeed. I'd be cool with keep putting the faith in him and having Russell Martin behind him. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's not the biggest deal.
No.
And there were plenty of opportunities for other guys to come up with big hits. Certainly Jose Bautista striking out with runners at second
exactly.
and third with one out in the first inning.
Yeah.
It's a big moment. Blue Jays had plenty of
Edwin
runners
had
on.
Some opportunities.
Yeah. But the Blue Jays, certainly not all is lost, down one game to none in this best-of-seven American League Championship Series. I would.
Yeah?
Okay. Troy Tulowitzki has been much better for a long, long sample size, couple of weeks. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We are in Newmarket for the hometown hockey tour. We've seen men in gorilla suits, unless that was a real gorilla. Lots of people going by here. Come check us out. If you're in Newmarket, or even if you're not, come to Newmarket because it's the home of Connor McDavid.
It'll be so worth it. You have no idea.
Yeah, we've got some hockey talk coming up after the top of the hour. And I know we don't want to lose focus on the here and the now with the American League Championship Series and the Blue Jays being eight wins away from the World Series, but it's hard not to also look forward to the future and what the future holds for this Blue Jays team with this Blue Jays management, the decisions they have to make. Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, how they rebuild the outfield. Michael Saunders, a free agent as well. The rotation returning intact. They lose R.A. Dickey, but he's not on the postseason roster. But the five starters, you throw Francisco Liriano in there, they're all coming back in 2017. So as much as you think it's maybe the last kick of the can because there's the possibility of losing Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion to free agency, should there be some comfort that Blue Jays fans take in the knowledge that, man, there's very few teams that already have their starting pitching figured out in 2017 and five really good starters as well?
Absolutely. I think it's more of a transition to a different type of team than necessarily a sharp drop, right? I mean, we've become in this Jays renaissance, which is now in its, whatever, 14th month. You're so used to thinking of them as this team that just goes out there and clobbers the ball. And obviously that changed a bit this year because this team didn't hit as much, but they still have that identity, I think. And yeah, the pitching really, especially the starting pitching, really emerged as a storyline this year. And you look forward to next season. And again, you know, you don't want to get ahead of yourself. It's baseball, things change. But chances are Marcus Stroman gives you more than he gave you this season. And then you look at Sanchez and think, okay, I mean, you know, you could have, I guess if you were talking about Stroman, you know, we just acknowledged he didn't have the year in 2016 that people thought. So maybe the same thing happens to Sanchez, but boy, he looks good.
Yeah.
And even if he comes back and is, you know, 90% of what you've seen on his best days in 2016, I mean, that could be a pretty serious 1-2 at the top, and then you're going with Estrada and Hap, who we've already filled, you know, half an hour talking about just how those crafty guys get it done. Yeah, I mean, of course, it would be difficult for any number of reasons, both tangible and intangible, to watch Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, two guys who were plucked from the scrap heap, came to Toronto, completely reinvented themselves as players, and rejuvenated their careers, and have had, you know, been through some very meh years, and are now, you know, being rewarded for some of the time they put in here when things weren't great. Of course, it would be difficult to watch them both walk away if that happens, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the Jays are falling off a cliff. It just means they're becoming the 1991 Atlanta Braves with Avery Smoltz, Glavin,
Maddox,
and Maddox.
Those guys did eventually win a World Series.
Yeah, exactly.
Just one, but they did win one. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon.
It does bring up an interesting question, though, is because you have this pitching staff in place, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and there's two pretty distinct like sides of the camp for this. One is that you have this pitching staff in place. Maybe that gives you an opportunity to rethink the way you go about winning ball games. Maybe you can play a little more small ball, which lets you swallow the notion of losing that power in the middle of your lineup a bit, knowing that you can hold teams to less runs. You don't need to get four home runs every game or eight runs or whatever. But Dixon, you said something really interesting when we were talking about this earlier, which was kind of the opposite of that, which is if you have this pitching staff in place, that's your opportunity to really go for it.
It's true. It is true. That, yes, if you were ever going to pony up, it'd be like, because, you know, we know the deal with these contracts, and this applies across sports, and it kind of drives me nuts in the analytical age when people jump on Twitter and go, oh, that contract's going to look so bad in 8 years. Well, who cares if you win the World Series
if you win,
next year?
Yeah, exactly.
You dine out on that for a decade if you're the Toronto Blue Jays.
Longer.
You know, you do. Like, the glow from winning a championship now, because it's so hard, it lasts years and years and years and years, and there isn't a single Jays fan anywhere on the planet who wouldn't say, I don't care if Eddie has to go out there with a cane in year five if I get to have the Jays, you know, win the World Series DVD that I can watch over and over and over and relive that moment. I don't care.
100%. Now, if it was as simple as just doing that, certainly, and you knew you made a deal with the devil, and
right,
you said, hey, 100%, you're winning a World Series title if you re-sign these guys, it's a different deal. I think part of it as well is how limitless is the supply of cash. Now, Mark Shapiro has said Blue Jays, even with the incredible seasons and fan attendance that they've gotten the last year and a half, that they will not likely be a top five payroll team. They'll be in the next five, though, which means that, yeah, you can afford to miss occasionally on contracts. You can swallow some money, and the Blue Jays have done that this year, right? The only reason they were able to acquire Francisco Liriano and Melvin Upton Jr. is because they didn't care about the cash, and they outbid the Orioles for Upton because they were willing to eat the rest of that deal, and the Pirates gave them prospects to eat the rest of Francisco Liriano's deal. So they've already done that, but I think the problem might arise is if at the end of that Encarnacion or a Bautista deal, like you say, they need to be trotted out with a cane or they're just ineffective or, you know what, they're not in the league anymore or not able to produce near the level that they are right now, and they're positionless as well, so they become a dead spot on your roster and you have to do something with that. If that inhibits you from doing something else down the line at that point because you're so strapped up against the top of your budget, that would be the problem. But if you, again, if you win the World Series, it doesn't matter, but there's no guarantees.
But even if you put yourself in a position to win a World Series, I think it doesn't matter. Like, that's kind of like a risk you have to be willing to take. But the other side of it is, like, it's not as if it's the Jays' call as to whether they bring these guys back. Like, Encarnacion in particular, I think, is going to be extremely coveted this offseason.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of teams throwing a
ton
of money.
Don't you feel that him in particular, if the money's equal, that he would be?
Yeah, he's a guy who seems to have found. It's like I liken it to like a Kyle Lowry with the Raptors, like someone who has found like a real home, a place where he excels.
But of course, he has to have the money. The money has
sure,
to be.
It has to.
And that's a big what if, especially if Shapiro's saying, you know, we're not looking to add a ton of salary or to not like make that jump in salary in the future. So there's a lot of variables. The Jays can only control so much of it. Encarnacion is going to have the say, I think, at the end of the day, obviously. Players have the power.
Yeah, no question about that. And certainly it'll be interesting to see what the market is for Jose Bautista, the way his offense has declined this season, the way he's been unable to stay healthy, and by the way, he's been unable to play the field at the effectiveness rate that he used to. Mm-hmm. Before we take the break, let's touch briefly on the National League Championship Series. It's Cubs-Dodgers, as the Cubs, with that incredible comeback in Game 4 in San Francisco against the Giants, scoring four runs in the top of the ninth to avoid going back to Wrigley and playing a very interesting Game 5. The Dodgers winning a Game 5 in D.C. on the road against the Washington Nationals in a game that lasted about 10 days. And it was done at like 1 o'clock in the morning. This is, hey, on the surface, Cubs-Dodgers, that sounds pretty good. There's a couple of historic franchises. And in the case of one team, a historic World Series drought, like I'm talking about 108 years. It's still insane to talk about. It does feel that the Cubs are this team, and certainly this would be the case if the Blue Jays make the World Series and face the Cubs. Mm-hmm. Everybody's rooting for the Cubs, it seems like.
Oh, yeah.
Just correct. Like everybody who's
everyone's
rooting,
second favorite team right now.
It's not even the history. Like, that's just a really likable team. Like,
yeah, you think?
I do. I think I really like their composition. I like the way they've developed. Like,
I have a little bit of Joe Maddon burnout.
Oh, good thing I didn't say, well, everyone loves Joe Maddon.
Yeah. I get it. He's really
maybe
unique,
overexposed.
Yeah.
You're
he's a hipster. Yeah.
Right. His glasses are obnoxious.
He's got horn rimmed glasses.
Fair
enough. It. They're really, really cute. I get it.
But as far as their roster is concerned, like their young players. I just think there's just a ton to like there. Their pitching staff is really good. Mm-hmm. Going out and getting Lester's was just huge. That game one's going to be really interesting because of that matchup, I think, with the Dodgers putting Maeda out there, who doesn't.
You wonder when they can go back to Kershaw after pitched
and
in game five.
And one theme it'll be interesting to keep an eye on is, you know, Kershaw comes out in this crazy circumstance and closes out that game. What if now this is him kicking off the chapter in his career where he's like, you know what, you can't hit this guy in the postseason now. Like, what if he comes out and chucks nine and, you know, gives up two hits the next time and all of a sudden it's just like this guy is you know, because obviously there's been this weird discrepancy between how effective he's been in the regular season where there's essentially no one in his category versus – for whatever reason, the same results haven't been there in the playoffs. So yeah, it'd be nuts if all of a sudden that, you know, the switch just flipped on that.
It's very interesting to see what's taken place in this postseason when it comes to reliever usage. Unless your name is Buck Showalter, And I don't know if it can't be a direct result of the heat that he took after not getting Zach Britton into that wild card game. But we see Dave Roberts go to his closer, Kenley Jansen, in the sixth and seventh inning. Andrew Miller, his usage, Cody Allen, like everybody's coming in early. The best relievers for teams are coming in early and in not traditional save situations. Is this something that is this the start of something?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a trend take off where closers now are more than one inning guys, and you need to be able to potentially throw or get six outs to be an effective closer in baseball. I think that's definitely something we're going to see more and more of. When developing young players, that's going to be something that is more value is placed on for sure.
Yeah, unless, again, your name is Buck Showalter. I imagine
the soon-to-be jobless Buck Showalter.
No, there's no way. They love him in Baltimore, and he still gets the
label.
To
me, that's a fireable offense.
I don't
the guy who pulled our power earlier.
Yeah, I don't
justified.
I don't necessarily disagree with that either. All right, coming up, we're in Newmarket, the home of Connor McDavid. So let's talk a little hockey. We will talk about Mr. McDavid, Sidney Crosby, his concussion, and Austin Matthews, an incredible performance in his first NHL game. What does he have in store for game number two tonight against the Boston Bruins? Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, it's Ryan Dixon, Sportsnet Magazine Live. We are live in Newmarket for the Hometown Hockey Tour. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Hey, happy Saturday. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We are live in Newmarket, the Hometown Hockey Tour. Lots of folks coming by saying hello. If you are in the area, do the same. Try to not be standoffish. I've only had one coffee today, though. Could use a second. All right, let's talk some hockey, because we are in Newmarket, the home of Connor McDavid, who now leads the NHL in points. Doesn't lead in goals, though, because Austin Matthews still sitting on his four-goal performance in Game 1 on Wednesday. That was pretty ridiculous. It's not often does the reality live up to the hype, and at least for one game, Ryan.
It exploded it.
Twitter was on fire on Wednesday.
This is the—so one interesting dynamic with Matthews is, you know— there was never any doubt he was going to go first overall. But when you had a guy like Laine emerge behind him, I mean, Laine gets the comparisons to Ovechkin. I mean, the easiest way to put it is, you know, if you landed from outer space and watched your first hockey game, like there's a chance, not a chance, there's a good chance that you would watch a game and go, oh, this is the, you know, look at this guy who's roofing the puck from the top of the circle. Like, Laine is a guy who's going to immediately draw your eye, and he does the most easy thing to celebrate in the game, which is score a goal. So I feel like to some degree I've been telling people, like, you know, you might not see it right away, but you're really going to be happy with the Matthews pick. You know, like, we've been emphasizing that, oh, he's more of a less flashy, but, you know, Anze Kopitar type. And then he just comes out and is like, oh, by the way, I'm super skilled too, right? Like, we've kind of almost been ignoring the fact overlooking the fact that, forget that he's big and strong and 200-foot game and yada, yada, yada. He's good. Like, yeah. He's just a really, I mean, as his U.S. National Team Development Program coach Don Granato told me, I mean, he's an elite athlete who chose to play hockey. Like, he's a guy who, right, you know, normally, given where he was from, most of the guys with that much athletic ability choose to play a different sport because that's what's going on there. And this kid was drawn to hockey, and here you are. You've got someone who, as you said, Ben, I mean, great hopes were attached to, and man, did he ever, I mean, that second goal was such a good indication of that. That is the best of Austin Matthews on one shift, because he is that hounder who's going to strip the puck from people. He's not going to turn around and take it to the net and bury it every time, but yeah, he's someone who's going to be a smothering player to play against, but can also exploit, you know, just the smallest crack of daylight. So, another interesting offshoot from this too is, I mean, it's Toronto, it's hockey, it's the Maple Leafs, so there's still going to be all kinds of attention paid to everyone. William Nylander, Mitch Marner are still going to have a lot of focus, but it's kind of like they get to exist off in the sideline now a little bit, right? And just kind of do their thing in the shadow and not get, not get hounded every game. So there's just endless benefits to making the good decision to rebuild this team, getting some, number one, good fortune to win the lottery, and then good fortune to win it in a year when a player like Matthews is available, and here you go. You got a hopeful fan base.
What's really cool about it, and you kind of just touched on it briefly there at the beginning, Ben, is that, you know, when it comes to hype and whatnot, you know, there's always a question. Like, I'm personally always really skeptical when guys are hyped because you wonder, you know, is it being manufactured?
Yeah.
Obviously, in a market like Toronto, it's important for media companies like ours and whatnot for the Leafs to have relevance and to have a following. So there's always that kind of air of skepticism. I felt the same thing with McDavid, a guy like in the NBA, like Karl Anthony Towns. Like, when guys are hyped so much as, like,
well, LeBron too, right?
LeBron, like, yeah. Like, how can you possibly?
Bryce Harper was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 years old
as a high schooler. So when you see that actually pan out and prove to be totally justified, it's really cool. It's special and it's pretty rare. And you saw that with McDavid. You're seeing that with Matthews so far. The hype is totally justified in his case thus far. I've been. Obviously, I was stunned by what we saw. But also, that's the Leafs season in a nutshell. Like, I think, like, get used to that. At least they're going to be extremely watchable. There's something, like, there's reason to tune in every game, which was not the case last year, for me at least. But now you're going to
see. Last year was the look away season.
Exactly,
yeah, sure.
Exactly. But now you're going to see a team with its future stars in place. We're going to see these guys develop. We're going to see a really fun offensive team, and we're going to see them lose a lot. That's just how
there's all
how
kinds of excitement for the Leafs home opener, and it has nothing to do with whether or not they win it.
Right. I don't think anybody was talking about the fact that they didn't come away with the 2 points in Ottawa, despite the fact that they could have easily done it if Frederik Andersen did not allow the short side goal. Maybe they win that game. If they ever touch the puck in the overtime session, maybe they win that game. They didn't. They lost it.
But maybe, but like this season's not about winning and losing for the Leafs.
Isn't it? Like, to a degree,
don't
you don't
want
to finish 30th, do you?
I'd be fine with that. Keep adding to your crop here. I mean, you're not in a – I know I've heard people say the Leafs can be a playoff team. They got a goalie. They got whatever. I just don't think you're there yet. Just enjoy what you have, which is like the early stages of a really promising core. Led by this, like, superstar kid.
It's hard to have any idea what they are through 60 minutes of hockey. Sorry, 63 – or 60 minutes and 30 seconds
I've seen all
hockey.
I need to see.
But it is, I think, after one game, you can say that the pressure's already off Auston Matthews, seemingly.
In a way,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
because he's –
he's got a month's worth already.
Right. Like, if he had gone a week and a half, 2 weeks without scoring his first NHL goal, not that there – you know, people would be up in arms and they'd be rioting in the streets, but there would be the question would be every day.
Happened to McDavid last year. I forget how many he went, three or four. Yeah. And, yeah, it's it seems
Eichel
kind of ridiculous.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, you know, mostly you just want to get it off your shoulders and not have to worry about it. And, of course, it wouldn't have been that big deal. But you're right. It's nice that he doesn't have to, you know, 1 week from now talk about how he hasn't managed to score in the NHL through four games. And yeah, you have to think, I mean, I guess he's got the opposite problem now. Everyone's going to show up at ACC being like, yeah, so four more, right?
Yeah, exactly. It is interesting as well that they have partnered him with a couple of young players as well, and Zach Hyman and William Nylander, who are skilled, and Hyman's a guy that's a little more of a grinder, I suppose, gets to the front of the net, bangs bodies, and does the little things that you like to see a young player do. But they didn't put him with James Van Riemsdyk and Leo Komarov, which they could have easily done, right, to ease his transition to the NHL. They said, here are some young kids with some promise, and in Nylander's case, and maybe with Hyman to a degree, some line mates with skill have at it.
I think it's because Babcock's being realistic in terms of where this team's at. Like, you just want to develop chemistry and develop your players, and that's the priority right now. And it's good to see them kind of being real with where they're at.
And the question of Mitch Marner making this team was answered rather quickly. His first preseason game, he was real good. Really, and it never bubbled over to, I mean, during the preseason, it was not a discussion. You never really heard people taking the other side of things. You had an idea that Mitch Marner would be on this team to start the season, and at least for the nine games. Despite being held off the score sheet in game one, I think he impressed as well.
I don't think, I've never thought he was going anywhere. I mean, he is a perfect example of a guy who maybe if you're the Leafs, if you had the opportunity, you'd put him in the American League. But with a year of junior eligibility left, he can't go there. I mean, even in this new world Leafs order of, you know, doing things, quote unquote, the right way, the slow build, you know, bringing players along as slowly as possible, I just don't think there was ever going to be a benefit to sending him back to junior and having him score 300 points
exactly.
with the Knights. And the way the NHL is now as a top nine league, it's so much easier to break someone in versus maybe a few years ago where you thought, well, you know, there's more of a discrepancy between top six, bottom six. And, you know, if you're a top six guy, then you're going to play this many minutes. I mean, he can play 15, 16 minutes a night. They can hide him. And they might not need to because he, I mean, just in terms of pure jaw-dropping hands and playmaking ability, he's still the best one out of Nylander and Matthews, I would say. I mean, Mitch Marner's the guy that's going to make you go, oh, my God, what just happened there? But, yeah, I mean, he's Babcock talked about how much better defensively he is, and this can segue to the kids taking over the league, but, I mean, I'm looking around, I'm seeing some of the young, aspiring hockey players here in Newmarket, and I just think it's cool now to be the total package 200-foot player, whereas I feel like when I was a kid, it was like, yeah, it was cool to score goals and, you know, try to mimic someone's celebration. That's still the case, but when you have, you know, the guys that these guys look up to, Jonathan Toews, John Tavares, I'm just looking at our billboards here, they are absolutely freakishly maniacal about improving in every aspect of their game. And it's not like Phil Esposito or Mario Lemieux where it's like, well, maybe they get on their own side of the red line. We'll see. Like, that's just not the example anymore. And kids are growing up watching that and trying to mimic that from an early age. So when Mitch Marner comes into the league, it's not about like, well, he's so good offensively, he doesn't have to worry about defense. Mitch Marner, I guarantee you, has been paying acute attention to defensive detail since he started playing AAA however many years ago, and the result is they enter the league as rounded players.
You see it, like, certainly in the last two draft years, like, a lot of kids coming to the league, putting that emphasis on what can I do to contribute to winning as opposed to getting on the stat sheet or getting, you know, my numbers up as high as possible.
Yeah, it's just not a world anymore where, well, if you score goals, you're given a pass on everything.
Right.
Yeah, you're given a pass. Ovi still gets, you know, if you're scoring 50 a year, you're going to get more rope. But more to the point, it's like, I don't think kids want to be, you know, oh, I just score goals and that's it. Like, they want to be those players who are in all situations and can be counted on to win faceoffs, play defensively. Like I said, I just feel like that's what's cool now.
Speaking of those young players, Ryan, you had a chance to check out one of those young players, and maybe you're the angel of death because you arrived on Jack Eichel's doorstep and he went down with a high ankle sprain.
Funny, can I tell a quick story? So, yeah, I get to Buffalo Wednesday morning, going to do a feature on the Sabres. And yes, we're almost all, I just talked to the GM, Tim Murray. We talked about the need for luck in a rebuild, and boom, 10 minutes left in practice. And yeah, the scream just took the wind out of the entire building. Then I go for a walk Sunday afternoon in Buffalo. I'm walking by the revitalized canal side. Shout out to Buffalo, doing well. And a woman is slapping her husband's face and asked me to call 911.
Oh, my God.
She's like, his blood pressure really dropped. She's dumping water on him. It is a crazy thing actually dialing 911. he's okay, he was fine, and he came around, but I was like, what is my aura today? It was,
crazy. Evander Kane.
I guess the last thing was I was at the game Thursday, and poor Kane went down. So, yeah, I mean, the Eichel thing is devastating for Buffalo. He quietly, because of McDavid and other rookies, had a really good year last year, especially after, if you lop off the first like 3 weeks, he was, you know, really productive. You know, he's probably a guy who was going to make that jump to 65, 70 points. He's a, you know, as noted in the story I wrote and will be up on sportsnet.ca tomorrow to plug it. He came with the tag as a consolation prize because he was after McDavid, but I mean, he is outrageously talented and big and fast.
He's like a bona fide A1.
I mean, absolutely. 9 years out of 10, he's the first overall pick. It's only when a generational guy comes along. So, yeah, I mean, Buffalo being 1 year ahead of the Leafs in their rebuild. So last year they gained like 27 points. This is probably what didn't make the playoffs. That's probably what the Leafs, you know, are setting up for or have in mind maybe. This year, Buffalo does have very clear designs on making the playoffs, and unfortunately, you know, it's going to be tough because they're going to have to at least tread water here. No Eichel, Okpozo, their big free agent signing in the summer.
Great
pickup. Took a shot off the knee in the preseason. He's going to be back soon, but he missed the opener. Kulikov, the guy they trade for to try and shore up the D, he missed the opener with an injury. Now Kane goes crashing the boards, you know, cracked his ribs. He was looking really good with Eichel and Reinhardt on a line that they were hoping was going to carry them. So you're never going to believe this, but some tough luck in Buffalo. Has that ever happened to sports teams there? I don't know.
Wide right. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We're in Newmarket for the hometown hockey tour. So, you know, not that I miss the days of bust, but it's been a while since we've seen a high draft pick bust in the NHL, right? Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel. Auston Matthews just won game, but...
And we might be seeing one turn it around in Nail Yakupov.
Maybe. I mean, that's just one game as well, but he scored in his first game. I mean, it's hard to be for him to be much worse than he was in Edmonton. But the Oilers are a team, and we're in Connor McDavid's hometown, so...
Are we ever.
Let's talk about Connor McDavid. Oilers are a team that, boy, they would just like to be in the discussion for a team with something to play for at the end of the season, because the rebuild is seemingly never-ending in Edmonton. Pretty good start to their season. Get the Flames twice, beat them twice, and Connor McDavid picking up where he left off in his rookie season.
Luchik looked nice as well.
Yeah.
Dreisaitl.
Can we finally talk about the fine folks of Edmonton? They got a new building, like turning the page on the misery that's been the last decade or so?
I think so, and like obviously it all starts with McDavid. I mean, it's like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of player. Oh, he's got 6 points in two games. He's just been unbelievable. And, yeah, you have someone like that. It kind of seems like with players like that, as long as they stay healthy, everything can kind of fall into place around them. You know, you need that kind of centerpiece. Certainly, like, the Leafs are looking at Edmonton as, like, a best-case scenario for the way they might be able to turn around. But, yeah, I think there's a lot to like with that roster. They have a lot of flexibility if you talk about, like, future moves and whatnot, but they just have a really good makeup. And if it's all centered around a guy like McDavid who's going to appears to be ready to dominate the league for a decade, I mean, you'd imagine they're going to turn around in a big way.
Yeah, it's the back end that's still the question.
Yep.
You know, how will
yep.
the much maligned Larson for Taylor Hall trade work out? There's still room for Larson to grow, and I think that sometimes gets overlooked sometimes when people critique that trade. And Cam Talbot, he showed some good stuff last year once he got settled in, so we'll see exactly where he can go. But, I mean, if he can bring it, Edmonton.
There's a ton of talent.
I'm hesitating, but you know, could push for playoff spot. It's so tough out west. There's so many good teams that you don't want to get ahead of yourself. But yes, I mean, in terms of, I mean, going from this team being run by the Oilers old boy network to what is happening now, yes, absolutely. They're miles ahead.
Well, and we did this show. I guess it was it last week, Ryan? No, it was a couple of weeks ago. You were on
World Cup,
with John Gregg previewing the NHL season, and both of you guys were in agreement about the Calgary Flames being one of those teams that could be a real interesting team to watch because they were so bad last year. but almost entirely because they got no goaltending. Well, they're 0-2 now.
Yeah.
Where are you on the Calgary Flames?
I lump Calgary in with Winnipeg and Edmonton as teams that they have a real future. It's just when does that future get here? And I think Winnipeg probably is the best bet to be in the playoffs this year out of those teams. Again, goaltending issues that maybe they will be able to solve this year, moving on from Pavlich. But, give Brian Elliott a little time. Calgary's D, I see a quiet bounce-back year from Dougie Hamilton after his first year in Calgary getting settled in. I mean, Giordano, Brody, Dougie Hamilton, that's a pretty mean top three. If Giordano, he's had some injury troubles. If he stays healthy, I mean, he is a do-it-all defenseman. And another kind of quiet storyline that gets lost in Calgary after Gaudreau and Monahan is Sam Bennett as a number two center. I mean, he could really be ready to take a step. So, yeah, I do think Calgary is a team, I would have said, everything changes, of course, after two games. But I would have said probably even more than Edmonton that, has a chance to push back toward the playoffs. They've got there a couple years ago when they were the object of scorn in the analytics community. Some would say the predictable fall last year. But, yeah, as you mentioned, they had one clear trouble area that was goaltending. Hey, I mean, they didn't trade for Henrik Lundqvist. They traded for Brian Elliott, who's always been a 1A. But it should be able to give good enough goaltending or better goaltending than what they got.
It did seem like a missing piece kind of signing, like a giant piece of the puzzle filling in. And also, I really like what they did at the draft. Like, I think they got pretty lucky with Tkachuk falling to them. I know he hasn't been like stellar. He hasn't been like Lane or Matthews so far. But that's a really nice piece who I think can contribute to them in a really big way. Even if it's not this season, then within the next few seasons. I think there's a lot to like with that roster as well. I'm really high on the Flames, despite them not looking so hot through two games.
Ryan, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the Montreal Canadiens, who won their first game. Carey Price has not yet played because he's got a flu. Oh, wait, are there any Montreal Canadian truth or conspiracy theories about Carey Price and the flu? Because apparently he's going to miss another game.
You bringing out the bedwetter term again?
Yeah, I don't know. What's going on? It is kind of interesting. How do you... I mean, missing two games with the flu?
There's everything on Twitter. I think it's fair to say it's a sore spot among Habs fans because it doesn't take much to get them worried when it comes to Price, because we all saw the kingdom crash down last year when he's on the sideline. I'll stay in the rational camp and assume he is still just eating a lot of chicken noodle soup and will be probably good to go for the home opener on Wednesday or shortly thereafter. There's one thing we know.
Well, if he misses Wednesday's game, then it'd be full-on panic mode.
Well, we know they're not going to rush him back, right? And it helps that, talking about signing to address a specific need, they signed Al Montoya because they want to upgrade their backup situation. Montoya comes in and actually, after the first period in Buffalo, had to be really, really good and had a big hand in them winning that game. So they have faith in him to hold the fort for a week or however long it takes, as long as it is a short-term thing. And, I fully expect before too many more days go by, Canadiens fans are going to see what they haven't seen almost for a year now.
Yeah.
And that is Carey Price playing a regular season game for their team.
All right, so Sidney Crosby's still out with that concussion. It's scary to think of him in particular having a concussion, because we know
his history.
Yeah, his terrible history with concussions, and apparently it happened at practice. Apparently it had nothing to do with the World Cup of Hockey.
That's Crosby's head pounding right now.
But he's been skating, hasn't been practicing. But how concerning is this? And especially considering his history, how careful are the Penguins in bringing him back?
I'd be extremely cautious. I mean, you don't mess around with something like head injuries and concussions, especially with a guy with a storied history of having problems there. The thing they have going for them is that they're still a deep team with a ton of talent. A guy like Malkin can be your go-to scorer. Kessel's obviously been really good for them. So I would be in no rush to bring him back. I think they can kind of right the ship. Look what happened last year, where they were kind of mediocre for a while and really took off towards the end of the year. I mean, I think they can have comfort in kind of doing the same thing again this year, making a late push if they need to when Crosby comes back. I would not rush that whatsoever.
Yeah, I think safe to say it's going to be, no pun intended, a kid gloves situation. You mentioned his history. I mean, it does seem like, I mean, almost right away, like I think it was Friday that it came out,
And, yeah, you're right off the top, like, are you kidding me? But, you know, he was back skating almost a couple days later. I mean, even that is a good sign that hopefully it's not on the level of what we've seen with Crosby in the past. But, yeah, there's no way.
Like, why would you rush it? What's one reason why you would?
Well, and you're also coming off a Stanley Cup championship.
Yeah, that's
as
right.
Well.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's no pressure.
You can dine on the championship. So, yeah.
Before we take the break, so, yeah, Austin Matthews obviously impressing in his first game in the NHL, scoring 4 goals. Patrick Laine, he also scored in his first game. The young players, as you mentioned, Ryan, are taking over the NHL. Outside of Matthews, because he's got to be number one, who impressed you the most after one game. You look at Jesse Puljujärvi, he got into some action as well. Nail Yakupov is a first overall pick from a couple of years ago as well. But who impressed you outside of Austin Matthews when it comes to the young players and in their first games in the NHL in 2016?
I think one interesting thing to keep an eye on is the Philly D. Gostisbehere came out of, largely nowhere last year and had this, like, you know, scored at this historic pace for a defenseman. Now they got Ivan Provorov there, who was drafted in 2015 and, you know, was one of those guys who people said is rare for a defenseman, but people were saying right off the hop, you know, he could step right into the NHL. He played another year of junior. Now he's with the Flyers. He's got a point already. You know, we're becoming conditioned to seeing the forwards jump to the NHL and make an impact, but now maybe the defenseman will be able to do it as well. So, and Philly's got more guys coming on the back end. They're an interesting team to watch, but yeah, I think Provorov and sophomore Gostisbehere are two young D-men that are definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Maple Leaf fans definitely keeping an eye on Austin Matthews, who again gets to play his second career NHL game, and he doesn't have to do it opposite the Toronto Blue Jays, who play at 4 o'clock. He plays at 7 o'clock on Hockey Night in Canada on CBC, trying to build off a 4-goal game in his debut on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey on Wednesday, naturally, in Ottawa against the Senators. When we come back, Raptors regular season fast approaching as well, and they were 6 wins away from winning an NBA title a season ago. They will open up their season on the 26th against the Detroit Pistons. We'll preview their season, have a look at some of the positional battles here in the preseason, and we'll talk about the city of Toronto and its sports resurgent, because it seems like a good time to be a fan of sports in the city of Toronto with the Blue Jays, the Maple Leafs with some hope, and, of course, the Toronto Raptors. That's coming up next, and a whole lot more. Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. We are live in Newmarket for the Hometown Hockey Tour. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. With a taste of what's on Sportsnet.ca right now, here's Christina Rutherford.
You probably noticed J-Hap can be hard to read. If you're in the Rogers Centre and you only watch the body language of the Toronto Blue Jays lefty on the mound, you'd have no idea whether he's pitching a no-hitter or if he just got lit up for 8 earned runs. Some teammates call him Steady Eddie. R.A. Dickey calls Hap a cyborg. That's part human, part robot. We sat down with Hap, who goes by J, not J-A. We talked to his mom, we talked to his teammates, and we discovered that he does actually have emotions. He loves when the Jays turn two or hit a home run. If he's not pitching well, he might go into the tunnel and yell or wail on the punching bag they have set up there. And try playing a board game with him. He gets competitive. Hap is shy, and he doesn't like talking about himself much. But on his second time around in Toronto, his first 20-win season, he's trying to enjoy the attention that comes with being a Cy Young candidate, because he knows he ought to.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
When the forest burns along the road.
11:36, Sportsnet Radio Network. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis, Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon. We are live in Newmarket for the Rogers Hometown Hockey Tour. A lot going on here. Lots of food. Lots of great events for the kiddies. Young and old alike, actually. And then there's us. You can come say hi to us with you for another 15 minutes or so. Gents, we'll get to the Raptors in just a second. And I know there are no championships yet to celebrate in Toronto, but it does feel like we're at a rare moment in time for sports fans in this city. Blue Jays in their second straight American League Championship Series. The Raptors were in the Eastern Conference Final, took the eventual champions to six games in the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Maple Leafs, while they're probably a couple of years away from even making the playoffs and certainly contending for a Stanley Cup, they seem to have a generational talent in Auston Matthews. This has not been the case very often over the last 20 years. There's been a lot of wandering around in the wilderness when the Leafs were collapsing against the Bruins, and the Blue Jays had that horrible, disappointing season of 2013 after acquiring all those players in the offseason and before the Raptors became what they are right now. It feels like this is a long time coming for Toronto sports fans, but it's great, and they're enjoying it, I think.
Like, do you remember ESPN did those rankings every year of, like, the worst sports cities?
Yes.
And Toronto was always number one. It was always, like, Toronto or Cleveland, ironically, because Cleveland
we're last, kind of yes.
Cleveland
another
now as
resurgence
well.
There.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. Like, it's a really cool time to be a sports fan in the city. It does feel like it's been a while, but, you know, I was thinking about, like, and it might just be, you know, personally where I was at the time and place, but, like, the late 90s, early 2000s when you had the Blue Jays were terrible, yes. But with the Leafs and Raptors, you had the excitement with the Vince Carter era and going at least second round in the playoffs, I was going to say deep.
Yeah.
And with the Leafs, you had those Sundin teams when they brought McGillie on board. They were reaching a conference finals. That seemed like the closest thing to right now in terms of, like, promise across more than just one team.
Mm-hmm.
But now you get to throw in the Blue Jays, and it really makes a difference. I mean, the caveat is, like or the elephant in the room, whatever, is that the Leafs aren't good. But they are exciting, and they are promising. So they had that going for it. But in terms of the Raptors and the Blue Jays, yeah, Blue Jays right here in the ALCS again, and the Raptors I think are poised to go back to the conference finals once more. So yeah, you're really as close to knocking on the door of championship type teams as we've seen in a long, long time here.
It's tricky with the Raps because basketball is a sport where at the beginning of the season you can basically circle five teams and say one of these teams is winning it. And Toronto isn't one of those teams. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, 50 wins,
you can circle two teams.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Exactly. Like,
if you're picking five teams in basketball, the Raptors are one of them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So there you go. Like, we would all be in agreement that they don't.
The Warriors and Cavs are going to meet again in the NBA Finals.
And it's like, going to be amazing.
but, yeah, but you go to the Jays, and, like, they could win the World Series. They absolutely could win the World Series. And with the Leafs, okay, yes, there was more excitement in terms of the team was achieving some things, you know, in the past 20 years here and there. But if you go back to the Pat Quinn era, even the, like, Doug Gilmore, Wendell Clark era, there was no discernible plan in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Cliff Fletcher came to town, fleeced the Flames, got Doug Gilmore, and all of a sudden the Leafs, you know, were this force. And within a couple years, they were trading away, you know, first-round picks for old guys and sliding away. They signed Curtis Joseph, and they had, you know, a great number one center in Sundin, but there was a cap on where that team was always going to go. You know, they were, by the time they got to the conference final, you said, well, you know, they've kind of done what they could do, and they go out and sign Shane Corson and Gary Roberts, but, you know, well, that'll get us through this year. The Leafs aren't good now, but the way they are run should have Leaf fans 10 times more excited
enough,
than they've ever been about this hockey team.
So part of that, the feeling good about your local sports teams are the Raptors, who are, yes, on the verge of opening up their regular season. They've improved as far as win totals during the regular season each of the last 3 years under Dwayne Casey. They're setting new franchise marks for wins every single year. They're reaching levels in the playoffs that they've never reached before. although it took a couple of seven-game wins. But they all count, and they made an Eastern Conference final against the eventual champs and took a couple of games off them in the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dave, is there anybody out there that's evaluating this Raptors team, though, as being better than the one that took the floor in 2015-2016? I don't see a lot of that because the addition, the key addition, Jared Sullinger, and the key loss is a big one, Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, I think for the most part, people are expecting a minor downturn for the Raptors. Me personally, I think that number two seed in the East is right where they're going to be again. I see them absolutely replicating what they did last year. And in fact, you could make an argument for them being stronger this year because of their depth and the continuity. Guys like their young players like Norman Powell taking another step forward and how much that's going to impact them. Yeah, they got rookies who remains to see how much they're going to play. But a guy like Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl, they can contribute. Sullinger comes in, and he's a very different player than Biyombo. But in terms of level of play, I think he can offer you, like they're on par in terms of what they can contribute to the team, just in different ways. Biyombo gave you that defensive edge that Sullinger is not going to give you, but Sullinger gives you this offensive poise and versatility that Biyombo could never come close to replicating. So in a sense, they kind of cancel each other out. What Biyombo brought you was this kind of unquantifiable like character or like mental edge that he really, when his presence kind of made a big impact, and it remains to be seen if Sullinger can do that. But really, basketball, you know, we're talking about your star players are where it starts and ends, and with Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Valanciunas building off that really strong playoff push, and their young depth, I think there's a lot of reason to really like what the Raptors are going to do this year. I don't see them being a very different team than what we saw last year.
How much further do you think Valanciunas can go?
I think they're going to try to use him a lot more. I don't know if we're going to see what he was doing in the playoffs.
But don't we hear that every year? It's, oh, well, they got to stop being so guard-dependent, and those guys need to move
the
ball more.
So I don't think they need to stop being more guard-dependent. I think they need to just embrace who they are. So maybe we don't see Valanciunas get incorporated more. Like, yeah, that is the conversation all the time. But let's pretend they're using the exact same. They're still a really good team in a good position, and they don't need to use him a lot more. Like, what he provides is valuable, and if you're going to manufacture points in your backcourt, just embrace that. That's something you're, like that's the way you're going to win basketball games, through DeRozan and through Lowry, and Valanciunas is just kind of the gravy on top. And then the guy no one talks about this year, or no one's talked about enough heading into this season, is Damari Carroll.
Yeah,
who was like their big offseason signing this summer in a sense because we didn't see him so much last year. And if he's anywhere close to what he could be, I thought in the playoffs he made a huge impact on both ends of the floor. His shooting's still coming along. He's still not 100% recovered from that knee injury. But throw him into the fold in a meaningful way, and this team is, I truly believe they're at the same level they were last year, and they can replicate everything that they did.
I was surprised to hear when camp first opened up for the Raptors that Carroll was still not yet at 100%.
I was shocked. That came out on Media Day, and I was pretty floored by that because it's been, you know, he's been nursing that injury for a long, long time. The question that becomes, like, considering you got Terrence Ross, who also just kind of was injured a little bit, although I think it's minor. Considering you have Terrence Ross, who I think is poised for a big season and has looked really good in what we saw in the preseason, you have Norman Powell, who's ready to take on a bigger role. Do you need to bring Carroll in early? Like, would you rest him to start the season until he's 100%, or do you want to incorporate him as much as possible into the lineup? I think it's going to be a big question around the team in the first month or so. Personally, I would lean towards just chilling, rest him. You know, give those minutes to a guy like Powell and Ross, and then when he comes back fully healthy, you got a guy who can contribute in a way that you intended when you first signed him.
I think Norm Powell's the real interesting cog on this Raptors team because you talk about the teams that can win a championship, and it's basically two, right?
Yeah.
It is, although we'd never count out the Spurs.
No.
I really like the Spurs. Like, I'm doing a story on sportsnet.ca. I'm just doing, like, predicting the standings, and I really toyed with putting them above the Warriors.
Really?
Just because you're factoring in the time it'll take to really get on the same page with them.
Yes.
And the fact that everyone always forgets how good San Antonio is and how good Kawhi Leonard is, mm-hmm. how good Pau Gasol still is, who they just brought in.
Well, for the Raptors to be on that level, they'll need they're already at a level where they have two stars, maybe not superstars, depending on how you think of DeMar DeRozan. Kyle Lowry, during the regular season, was the best point guard in the Eastern Conference.
He was a legit MVP.
He was unbelievable. Now, postseason things changed a little bit for him, certainly. But if the Raptors have those two guys at a high level, when you add a third, you really have something. And who knows if Jonas Valanciunas is the guy to step into that role. But Norm Powell, in the limited time we've seen of him in the NBA, seems like there could be something there that might be a guy that can start and be a real impact player in the NBA. Where do you see him this season, Dave? Is he still another year of development away from being a guy who forces his way into more minutes?
Well, he's a guy who it's all about the minutes. Like, if he gets minutes, he will contribute. But when you look at the roster composition, it's going to be tough for him to get significant minutes. He's probably behind Ross on the depth chart coming off the bench. If they do rest Carroll, that'll obviously give him his opportunity. But the cool thing about Powell is, like, if you ask him about it, he'll interrupt you and tell you that he hasn't done anything yet, and he's nowhere near being ready to be.
I think that comes with being a second round pick as well, right?
Well, yeah. Well, that gives you like the edge, the chip to like prove that you're ready. But his mentality is like, this is just my second year. Like, you haven't seen anything yet from me. I'm still learning how to be a player, and so I'm not even close to scratching my potential. And I do believe that. So I think he can contribute in a big way. I don't think he's a guy who you're going to rely on this year. And it's going to be tough, too, because he's going to be a free agent after this season. A lot of people are going to want to bring him back. So it's a massive year for him personally and for the Raptors in terms of how they can kind of incorporate him into the fold. Because one thing he brings you outside of, like, I love his mental approach. You know, he's always attacking. Offensively, his game has really expanded. His shooting's gotten a lot better, and he just attacks the basket like very few players that we've seen in Toronto, certainly. But what he brings you is that defensive edge, ability to guard multiple positions. And, again, I don't know how much you read into the preseason of basketball, probably not that much. But the Raptors really struggled defensively so far. And so knowing how much Casey places an importance on defense, I think that's going to be Powell's window into carving out a big role this season.
Remember when there was a supposed moment of drama this offseason for the Raptors in DeMar DeRozan deciding whether he was going to stay or whether he was going to go? There was no drama.
We talked on this show last year, and I said that was never going to be
right.
A discussion.
There was a moment, certainly, where Raptors fans were questioning whether they wanted to see him back in the fold.
He didn't even talk to any other another team.
No, he didn't. But there's another question looming at the end of this season.
A much bigger one, yeah.
As Kyle Lowry is an opt-out that he will exercise and become a free agent as well. And he's saying all the right things about wanting to return as well. Yep. But do the Raptors at that point, because you're talking about a guy in his mid-30s and a point guard position, and I know he looks different physically than he has before he lost all the weight. I mean, how much of that question do we see asked quite a bit during this regular season?
I think it's perfectly valid. Like, I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, just let them play and we'll revisit at the end of the season. But that is the big the dark cloud kind of hanging over the team is Lowry's contract situation, the fact that you could lose him in the offseason. It's like we were talking about with Encarnacion and Joey Batts. It's like if you bring Lowry back for major money and he wants a 4 or 5 year deal, you're probably swallowing having a guy who you're paying $28, $30 million a year to at the tail end of his contract when he's 35, 36 and probably not contributing the same way he is now. So that's going to be a really tough decision. He's another guy who will be coveted on the free agent market. Point guards are extremely valuable, and he's one of the best in the league. And he's going to command like a max contract, which would then really handcuff the Raptors financially in terms of building around DeRozan and Lowry. You've got two guys you're paying like close to $60 million to. It just limits your options in terms of what you can do around them. So it's going to be a tough decision. I do believe that Lowry would want to come back. He's jumped around a few teams. He's never found a place where he's comfortable. And in Toronto, it's the first place where they said, and it took a while. Like, remember he was fighting with Calderon for minutes when he first came here?
Yeah.
And they tried to trade him to the Knicks.
They traded him to the Knicks.
And then James Dolan in his brilliance.
Thank you, JD and Knicks the straight shooters. Terrible band. So Lowry's, he's a guy who I think values what Toronto has, the opportunity he's gotten in Toronto, and will want to repay that in some way. But it's going to take a lot of money and a really tough decision in terms of if you want to do that. If you don't do that, your franchise takes a big step back, though, because you can't replace someone like that easily.
We got less than a minute. So answer this question for me, Dave, because it's the million-dollar one. The Raptors are good, they're entertaining, and they're a playoff team, and they can go deep in the playoffs, but they can't win a title. We all understand that. We just discussed maybe three teams can. How do you become that team? You have 30 seconds. Explain it.
you trade everybody for LeBron.
How do you get that generational talent?
Well, the thing is, like, to do that, it's going to be like a 10-year, 12-year process, because you're going to have to let this team dissolve, tank, get yourself a first round, like a
unless you can sign that guy in free agency.
Yeah, but if you bring back Lowry, basically what I'm saying is you can't.
So then why would you do it?
Because you can sustain a really high-level play, and you can try to get lucky. Maybe you play Cleveland and LeBron gets hurt, and now you are the favorite to win.
Or you draft 15th overall one year, and someone
and
just
you get
goes,
Paul George, and you get you Paul know, George
so
right
far
yeah.
beyond.
Yeah,
Or a Steph Curry.
Exactly.
At 7.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. That'll do it.
It'll be tough.
I think I like when you distill it to that point. All right. For Dave Zarum, Ryan Dixon, I'm Ben Ennis. We've been live and continue to be in Newmarket for Rogers Hometown Hockey. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.